Montrealers are heading to the polls on November 2nd, and while there are a lot of issues that they're going to be voting on, transit is definitely going to be a big one. The city of Orange Cones is facing what's been called a bike lash, as Projet Montréal has added almost 300 kilometers of cycling infrastructure to the city since 2017, representing a 35% increase under Mayor Valérie Plante. But that's also been accompanied by concerns from drivers about lost road space and a lack of local consultation. Ensemble Montréal leader Soraya Martinez-Ferrada, who's challenging Projet Montréal for a seat at City Hall, started her election campaign with a promise to halt bike path construction and audit the existing network, which she says is a safety concern. To get a better sense of what the candidates are promising and what the facts are on the ground, we're joined by a panel of experts in Montrealers' mobility. Meredith Alusi-Jones is a public transit and urban planning researcher at McGill with a background in civil engineering. How you doing, Meredith?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Raoul Garete is a cycling activist with the group Masse Critique, or Critical Mass, and the man behind the Vautier Vélo campaign, which evaluates the mayoral hopefuls on their bike lane promises. Thanks for joining us, Raoul.
Thank you.
And lastly, Dr. Nicolas Saunier is an engineering professor at Polytechnique and an expert on pedestrian and road safety and active transport. It's good to have you on.
Thanks for the invitation.
So I think it's safe to say that bike lanes have become a defining election issue. It's something the candidates have come back to again and again. It's maybe because it's one of the key identifiable differences between the two main parties, which are Ensemble Montréal and Projet Montréal, Le Crabouin with Projet, Soraya Martinez-Ferrada with Ensemble. You know, it's this question of more bike lanes or not. Raoul, maybe I'll start with you as our biking activist on the panel. Is it fair to say that Montreal is experiencing a bike lash?
Yes, I think there is a bike lash going on in Montreal. Actually, you've talked about the two main parties, which are Projet Montréal and Ensemble Montréal. But there are a couple of other parties that we sometimes miss to talk about. For example, we have on the left-leaning side, we have Transition Montréal, who also wants to like continue developing their bike network, like the bike network that belongs to all of us. And on the right side, let's say, you have Futur Montréal and Action Montréal, who have like very more reactive kind of platforms. They talk more seriously and like they don't take any detours to say that they want to take out some of the bike lanes we have in this city. An example is Action Montréal, who wants to tear down some of the problematic that they might find bike lanes in the city. They also want to like take out Big C during winter, where there has been a huge demand, and this is problematic for us because we have to like go beyond the current. And so far, it's been difficult with like polls showing that Ensemble Montréal is leading the polls, but nothing is still like nothing is played on still because there is like 40% almost of people that are still deciding on who to vote for.
Yeah, speaking of polling, a recent poll that was done in collaboration with Léger and Vivre-en-Ville, which is an NGO, showed that support for bike lanes among Montrealers, it's not a settled subject. They found that just over 50% of Montrealers that they surveyed were in favor of adding more bike lanes. Making more room for walking and cycling was the specific language. This was a poll about climate measures that cities could take, and this was the most controversial one. You know, is that reflected, Raoul, in the platforms? It sounds like it is reflected in the platforms of the candidates. I want to hear more specifically about what the various leaders are promising on cycling.
So it's very interesting how all the leaders are quite lukewarm regarding bike lane infrastructure. It is a very divisive subject, which is totally normal. I mean, there has been a whole development, as you said, Jules, of new bike lanes this past 8 years, especially after COVID. And this time it's like they don't want to go too far on the development of those bike lanes because they feel they might alienate a part of their electorate. However, this polling shows that half of Montreal is against and half is for more bike lanes. So it shows that there is kind of a critical mass, and that's a play of words here, where we have a growing majority of people who are for safer infrastructure, and a bike lane is not only safe for cyclists, but it's also safe for pedestrians and for other users of the roads. It takes off traffic, it takes off pressure on like road tearing away, like it goes away, like it just this, it's better for everyone. And it's also like a very good catalyzer for some places where the commercial street might be going in a downturn. So it's very important that we keep moving in cycle paths.
Yeah, but then how have we ended up here, right? We've had, since 2017, a Paul-Jean-Morel government, and they've, expanded our bike network significantly. A 35% increase, that's what we heard in the intro, right? That's a lot of bike paths. You're saying there's all these benefits. If we're seeing so many benefits, not just for cyclists, but for other road users, why is there such contention over bike paths? Where, as you said, there's the majority is in support of it, but it's a slim majority.
Mm-hmm. So just to begin, there are three like moments where big change is happening. The first big moment, let's say, it's when people are like adopting this new lifestyle of like going, getting around and doing groceries and going to school and whatever by bike. So it's a very marginal kind of lifestyle. And as time goes on and as the city recognizes biking as a viable way to get around, it starts like building more infrastructure for it. And so we are getting into this second phase of change, let's say, where there is a lot of people who are interested, who are keen to do cycling even in winter. Actually, my first time doing cycling was like last winter, and I loved it so much that I just want to, like, I'm never going to come back to like taking the metro, even though I really enjoy having this opportunity to like this option. So right here in the second phase, we have this problem where there is also the biggest backlash, and here you can say it's a bikelash pretty much, where people are also like very shaken up of like, oh, like there's a new infrastructure here. We have bikes that are like just not going the same speed as we are doing, and like we have to like adapt, and there is a lot of resistance. But at some point people would recognize it like officially as a new and legitimate way to like get around. And that's when we go to like when we get to the third phase. So Montreal is in the second phase right now, and it's like in the brink of going to the third one. And I think this election would actually tell us if people are ready to like go full speed on the next one or not. In other cities like Amsterdam and Copenhagen are in the third one, but we have to keep in mind that every city that is 100% bikeable now has been through all those three phases.
Well, yeah, it's interesting that you talk about these phases and other cities, because if you look at other cities in Canada, if you look at Toronto, like in Ontario, the premier is talking about, he was trying to get rid of bike lanes. He was trying to override city government and tear up existing infrastructure. So the bike clash, such as it exists here, is maybe not to the same extent as we're seeing in other places. But you're saying it's still there. And Nicolas, I want to throw it to you, because from Soraya Martinez-Ferrada of Ensemble Montréal, what we've heard is, you know, she says, I'm not anti-bike. How could you say this? What I am for is road safety. I'm for pedestrian safety. And we have to have a serious conversation about the way that bike lanes have been put in place. So she wants to audit bike lanes. She wants a moratorium on new bike lanes while the audit takes place. She wants to securitize ones that need to be safer, get rid of ones that aren't working, and maybe add. That's kind of what we're hearing from her. And it's on behalf of road users, like drivers, yes, but it's also, she says, an issue of pedestrian safety. As somebody who studies road safety, what do you think about that kind of argument?
Okay, so maybe for a second I'll remove my academic hat and just be a citizen in this. And I think it's quite dishonest the way she's putting it. I'll put it back now. And the real thing is that road safety, I mean, if you're just talking about cyclists, cycling, any kind of cycling facilities, and in particular segregated bike lanes, the type that we see now, whether they're bidirectional or the new Réseau Express Vélo, the REV, where they're each on its on their side, where they're physically separated, they are safer. And there's no discussion about that. There's been studies here, there's been studies everywhere, there's been studies in multiple cities in North America, it's of course in Europe, etc. So it is safer. But if she really cares about road safety in general, the main thing we can do is moving people out of cars. What kills people on roads is cars. The main measure you could implement is moving people to alternative modes, whether public transit or active modes of transportation. That's very simple. So it's really a way of putting it, but I think it's not the right way to put it. And it's also for people who are within kind of live and eat cycling and active transportation, when you remove your car-oriented lifestyle glasses, then you start to see how the whole system is just really just car-oriented. And again, framing the problem as we'll just look at cycling and whether the whatever bike lane, bike infrastructure is safe or unsafe, and remove it is completely again dishonest. Because if you apply the same lens, the same frame to all the other infrastructure, basically we should close half of the streets. Because there are crashes happening, every single day. And so why are we singling out cycling? Again, it's not really, it's not about having a proper, well-informed, evidence-based discussion here. It's really about appealing to voters and to the backlash that we're talking about.
Yeah, she does bring up some evidence that she says that, as more people get on bikes, there are more accidents. She's using SPVM data that says that, accidents on bikes and scooters have gone up from around 564 in 2022 to 674 last year, I believe. And maybe I'll take off my reporter hat for a second and just say, I didn't realize that she was talking about things like the Rochelle bike path until Projet Montréal put up big signs beside the bike path saying, Ensemble Montréal says that this is a danger. And I saw those signs and I said, well, this bike path is a danger. Getting on this bike path makes me feel insane. I've almost been hit by cars, but I also have maybe violated a road law or two on this bike path. I think it's an undeniable fact that there are things that could be done better. How do we have that conversation that takes into account that, our road infrastructure is not perfect? And we are in this maybe phase two where things are changing and adapting. Nicolas, do you have any input on how we can prioritize all road user safety in this moment?
So yeah, you're right. Not. I mean, you can certainly improve things. And Rochelle, I guess Rochelle bypass is a good example. And we were talking about phases. It's kind of the older infrastructure in Montreal. Those bidirectional bike paths. And the other thing is that you have to deal with the reality of the city. And the fact is, blocks in Montreal, the north-south blocks are long, and the east-west, or our east-west, like Rochelle, are shorter. So you have more intersections, and it makes them more dangerous. But you still have to go east-west, so you have to find a way. And that's not to say that you cannot improve the infrastructure and make it safer. And, as I have several projects with the city where we do look at different types of infrastructure. They're also implementing new ones. There's been different types like bicycle boulevards. There's a new types on Christophe Colomb. They're deploying, they call it European style intersections or Dutch style intersections, which should be safer. But we're not just saying, oh, we'll bring it. Oh, they're not just saying, the city is not just bringing them and saying, well, that's it. We implemented European style cycling. It's safer. No, we're looking at it and we'll have the data to back up, whether it's safer and also whether it's safer for everyone, not just cyclists. They should have benefits, actually, those types of, just again, take that as an example, also for pedestrians. So certainly, it's not to say everything is perfect, but on the other hand, just saying we'll look at, it doesn't seem like she's mentioning like we'll, you know, improve. We'll just remove it if it's unsafe. It does not really make any sense. I don't, even, again, like taking Rachel, I would doubt that removing that bicycle path, however imperfect it is, would make cycling on that road without the bike path safer. So I think it should be better.
As you mentioned it, Rachel has been around for like 40 plus years or so. It's been one of the first like serious attempts to do a bike path in Montreal. And it's not up to date now because it's overflowing with cyclists. Like even at 2 a.m., people are like, there are hordes of cyclists there. So that means that it works. Sometimes, like let's say Friday at 2 a.m., people are like going out and they're like just with their Bixies and everything. And it's a very narrow street as well. So anyways, like the whole like geometry of that street is problematic to handle that much cyclists in a very small space. There is a lack also of east-west connections between let's say Le Plateau and Hochelaga, or like Rosemont and Le Vieux Rosemont. There is nothing. There is no such thing as an east-west route. Like there is Rachel in the middle, then there is south, there is Maisonneuve, which is like the closest you can find that is secured for cyclists. And then up north, the closest you have is Bellechasse. So it's pretty much like give or take like a kilometer and a half north and a kilometer and a half back. And also you have to mention the fact that it's a hilly terrain, so people are not keen to go on a bike and like go the literal extra mile to go and to take the east-west route that is less like frequented. And so what we are seeing here is that Rachel is a big success, which is good news for us, but we might need to like reconsider maybe cars are too, like there are many cars there, or like maybe find a way to like connect the eastern part with the western part of Montreal in a street that is closer. Like for example, Mont-Royal, when it's pedestrianized, it's a very important artery for pedestrians and cyclists. And there's been also like a whole problem with like cyclists going too far, but going too fast. But that's because people have this opportunity to cycle on Mont-Royal, which is safe now that it's pedestrianized. So when it's not, you still have a lot of cyclists who are taking the extra risk of being in this very dangerous place because there is a lot of cars, there's a lot of buses, there are like deliveries and whatever, trucks. So yeah, it's a lack of alternatives.
Yeah, safe for cyclists, the pedestrianized Mont-Royal. But I think, you know, Ensemble de Montréal would push back and say, well, if you're walking on pedestrianized Mont-Royal, it doesn't necessarily always feel safe as a pedestrian because you have these bikes going by quite fast, quite close. But, you know, maybe we'll come back to pedestrianization in a minute. Meredith, I want to go to you and ask about, we've talked a lot about what the research is showing. I still think it's an election, right? It's not about the research, it's about the polls. And the polls show that the city is divided on this issue. And that's because a lot of people don't cycle, they drive. And, you know, what do you do as a city politician who's vying for people's votes, but also vying to represent the city when it seems like, you know, maybe from a climate perspective, maybe from a safety perspective, the research is saying big thumbs up, but people who are actually going to be voting for you, they're not so 100% behind this kind of policy. What is a politician to do?
Absolutely. So you mentioned the Léger survey earlier in the show, and going back to that, that is important data that politicians, planners, city officials need to look at. It shows a certain opinion that people may have, whether or not they're for or against bike lanes or pedestrian streets or whatever it may be. And it shouldn't be ignored. It has a very important use in terms of looking at intention to use this infrastructure, in terms of mode shift from people who are driving, maybe who need to walk more or cycle more. And ignoring these opinions will ignore a lot of problems that need to be addressed. We can also look at, from a more group perspective, who is saying no or yes for lanes? Is it older people? Is it people living to more dangerous, quote-unquote, bike intersections, not protected? Things like that. We need to situate these opinions rather than just taking it as a general 50-50 split. And it also orients city officials, politicians towards education. Where do I need to go door to door and talk to these people about my campaign? Where do I need to inform people about different cycling or walking programs that are available to them and that can help them have a more informed opinion?
Yeah. The last time I had you on the show, we were talking about the STM's free fares for seniors. I know that, you know, you're doing research at McGill on different demographics, how they're using public and active transport. You talked about different demos and what the numbers are. You know, what is the sense about who in the city is using these means of transit and who is not?
I mean, it really depends on the different modes and the different purposes. A lot of people are cycling for commuting, but also for leisure purposes, taking their kids out on the weekend for just a, you know, a bike path through Verdun or things like that. And it needs to, the different infrastructure that's available throughout the city needs to meet the needs of all these different groups. Obviously, that's easier said than done, but especially if we're going to encourage active travel throughout people's lives, let's say taking your kid on a more, you know, populated, dangerous, quote-unquote, intersection is maybe not going to be something that you want to repeat because you're afraid for your child's safety. If we try and increase the conviviality of these infrastructures, it can encourage younger people, older people to consider these modes as something safe and reliable and desirable.
And, you know, another big active transport policy we've seen over the last few years is pedestrianization. We've seen several commercial arteries pedestrianized over the summer, Montréal being perhaps the most famous, but there's, I think, seven throughout the city. Projet Montréal, the current government at City Hall, has wanted to expand that on St. Catherine. They even talked about pedestrianizing Camille-Laurent on Montréal itself. And there's been pushback from Ensemble de Montréal that's forced, and as well as constituents, I might say, forced some changes there. What Ensemble de Montréal is again saying is that there's not enough local consultation. What is the actual result that we've seen after several years of this pedestrianization pilot? How are people using it? What's coming from this new approach to using road space?
I would say that first, like, it's been quite successful. COVID was kind of a breaking point with all the initial stages and people, you know, like, that's where you could socialize safely at that point. So and from then on, you know, you could look at, I don't have the numbers in my head, but like how long all these pedestrianization and the different sites kind of increased and multiplied. I think they kind of reached a plateau, and we were involved in projects that are relevant in terms of evaluating how they operate, but again, like the coexistence, the cohabitation between cyclists and pedestrians on these streets. During this project, we also heard from that, you know, there was kind of a limit. I think kind of, for example, even Mont-Royal, which is the biggest one, kind of reduced a little bit its length the last year. So, but again, like, a lot of things we're talking are kind of half full, half empty, but I think they're more than half full, including for this topic, because including from some, you mentioned some concerns, the traditional or the typical case is shop owners who fear that the people coming will not come anymore, or that cyclists and, you know, that they can't. And there's actually data on that, or studies that show that they overestimate, you know, the share of people coming to the shops. That they think they mostly come from cars, when the fact, even before any specific implementation, any new feature, mostly they are pedestrians and cyclists. I mean, how many people, you know, if you have like one or two parking spots in front of your shop can come, you know, per hour? It's probably a lot less than pedestrians again and cyclists. And so they've been voting also with the money, even these people, because they're supporting part of the costs. It costs quite a bit to make the pedestrian streets, and they're supporting that. So definitely it's been, I think, a success. there are challenges, like any, you know, when a real vibrant city, there are challenges. To come also back to the cohabitation between pedestrian and cyclist, we looked at it. And because there was also some interesting, and to come back to Raoul, there was some interesting experiment at the time, recognizing that in many cases, whatever you do, you will have cyclists. I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing, but often when you have pedestrians or cyclists in the wrong places, it means you have a design problem. You know, we talk about desire lines. There's A and B, and people need to go to B. And the shortest path or what they think is the easiest is through a place they shouldn't be, in the case that might be pedestrian streets. And I realized that, for example, I live close to the one on Bernard in Outremont. It's a very short one. But as soon as the back to school, it was back to school, and I started to see parents with their kids. I did not see them before there was a pedestrian street, and now I could see them. And, you know, at 8 a.m., they're not causing any trouble, okay? So, and because it's serving a real purpose, again, these east-west streets, we're lacking facilities, and when we do not have the right facilities, we see people using what they can, what they feel is safer for them. But again, coming back, I certainly see that there are anecdotal and personal evidence of wrong cyclist behaviors as well. We have to acknowledge, and I think they're not acceptable. But there's a minority. What we saw in the data in various forms, we did video analysis. A colleague in INRS did field observation. We conducted surveys, and you know, it's overall there's nothing, no real problem. There are specific problems. There might be some, you know, case for a bit of enforcement, but those places are very safe.
Yeah, and before we close this segment, I do want to point out back on the pedestrianization angle. It's not clear cut. You know, one party is for it, one party is against it, because in the Plateau Montréal, the candidate for borough mayor for Ensemble Montréal is one of the people who's been behind the pedestrianization of Montréal. So it's not that, you know, Ensemble Montréal is against it, Projet Montréal is for it, but it's a bit more case by case. And this whole discussion is case by case because people are also voting in their boroughs where the realities on the ground are going to be different. Just to close up this segment before we move on to some labor issues with public transit and the STM, very quickly, what are you watching this election on transit? We have until November 2nd. What should people be watching for in this debate around public and active transit? Raoul, I'll start with you.
So as I was doing the kind of a guide called Votez Vélo, Vote for Bikes, I've been looking through all the engagements that have political parties. And so far, Transition Montreal hasn't a clear place, like a document where you can see like, oh, this commitment is for bikes, like how much they're going to do, like are they going to continue or going further, like let's say with Avenue du Parc, who had like a very tragic event going on. A cyclist was killed by someone who was driving a truck, and that actually shook the whole biking community in Montreal, because we just came to realization that we're all here very like it might be very dangerous for us, especially on that street. So far, like the most interesting thing that might happen is Transition Montréal. However, if we want to continue on this path of like more bike lanes and safer bike lanes, obviously like the good choice isn't Ensemble Montréal. It might be the default choice might be Projet Montréal, because they're still like going on their Plan Vélo, which is like a plan, 4-year plan, if I'm not wrong, where they're having new bike lanes in places that are further away, La Cordère or Henri Bourassa. It's very exciting because it will actually disenclave a lot of people there who would like to do biking, but they are very like far from like the main cycle paths. So yeah, it's like if I will be closely looking for like what Transition Montréal has to like offer for cyclists. But so far, Projet Montréal is still on this race for having the best platform.
Yeah, and if people want to read Voter Vélo, want to consult the guide, where do they go?
So we just launched, so this is a good occasion to launch our website. We've been on it for like a year, pretty much. It's still like on its first baby step. So anyways, it's masscriticmtl.ca. And if you want the English version, you just put a /en. You can also select it from the menu. And from there, you can see what we are, what is our mission, and also like the whole guide for Vote for Bikes in both English and French.
All right, Nicolas, I'm going to turn it over to you. What are you watching this election?
I would go in line with what I said. I think first is double standards, you know, like we apply different standards to different modes of transportation. And, you know, it's easy to get into, I guess, either default car-oriented mode or just, you know, listen to what people are saying, but just like shift your perspective and consider, you know, other modes or, you know, people. And I guess that's another point, like of different, you know, the diversity of users of transport systems and whether the proposed, you know, whatever implemented measure or policy, who does it serve? You know, does it serve everyone or does it serve, you know, a specific category? And I think we should build a system that is, you know, serves everyone. And that's definitely not cars or not just cars. We need other alternatives. Lots of people cannot drive anywhere. It's not a safe mode of transportation. And that's not how we build a sustainable and diverse city.
Meredith.
Yeah, to echo what Raul and Nicolas were talking about, I also am looking specifically at public transit just from personal interest of not just projects that are anticipated or that they're proposing, but also what they're going to do about the current service and the current level of things that is obviously not great if we're following the news at all or have lived through the last two strikes. So that's definitely something that needs to be addressed, the budget deficits and things like that and how Montreal plans on contributing to that.
And we are going to be talking more about that in just a minute. But first, I want to thank our other two panelists, Raul Garete and Dr. Nicolas Saunier, for joining us. It's been instructive.
Thank you.
Thank you.